We were talking about Blake Wheeler, and Brian was making the point that here's a rare creature. It's very rare, the player that goes through his career and gets tougher as the career goes on. That was certainly true of someone like Gary Roberts, and it's certainly true of Blake Wheeler as well. Were you there where he turned that switch on, or did that happen before you joined the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, you know what? Well, first of all, hello, fellas. Thanks for having me. He's a really interesting case, and Brian's 100% right. Like, you don't find many of these guys. But here's, I think, what is the driver with Blake. He just wants to win, and he wants to get better. So everybody says that. But what Blake figured out, and if you track his seasons, a lot of his seasons, he would start the first 20 games and he wouldn't score a lot. And then in the back half of the year, he would always do very well. What happened was, I think he would kind of come into the season with an idea, I'm going to do this all with my hands. You know, I've got some skill, and I'm going to rely on that skill. And then he'd get angry because it wasn't going his way. And as soon as that anger kind of percolated, boom. Then he was a hockey player. And right around the time, you know, that I got here, Blake figured out, this is what I'm good at, and this is what I'm going to focus at solely. To the point, you know, there are certain players, and I've been lucky, I had a handful of guys, Ronnie Francis, Matt Sundin, Paul Coffey, that make the coach better. And Blake Wheeler certainly taught me something that but for us, the most important thing a player and a coach need to agree on is what that player is good at. Because if you could agree on that, you as a coach will put that player in that situation. And if you don't agree on it, the guy thinks he's a real skilled half-wall power play player and the coach thinks he's a net front guy, you're never, ever going to get to the point that you have that relationship where you get the most out of him. So Blake figured out, what I'm really good at is I can push my body and drive myself harder than my opponent. And certainly by the time we get to the third period, they won't be able to keep up. So what he does is he trains like that. And you never get a chance to watch this guy practice. I'm telling you, he practices like he plays. And that's, I know we fire that around. That's what you got to do. There are very, very few players that actually do that to the point that you're going, Blake, you really need to be on the ice today. And then as he's got a little older, he's figured out, I don't need to be out there every day. But if he's on the ice, he's going. And that's now his NHL game. But he built that. He built that over the course of his career because he truly just wants to win.
Berkey?
Well, the other guy on your team that I find very interesting is Mark Scheifele. He went to the World Championships with Brad Treliving, and when he came back, we did a debrief on each team like we always do. So we asked the trainer, we had a trainer with Team USA, okay, go through player by player, coaches, who do we want down the road? Who would help us? Who would make us better? And he came back from Team Canada, and I said, who'd you like? He said, Scheifele. And I said, who else? He said, Scheifele. I said, there's got to be more than one player. He said, Scheifele. So this is a guy... does not get the recognition he warrants or deserves probably because he plays in Winnipeg and it's a smaller market. But this kid's a special player.
Right. So what you got there is let's look at him like we would look at Blake Wheeler. Mark, but it's just a different way of approaching the same goal. The guy wants to constantly get. Like he wants to be a player that when you're talking about Connor McDavid, and those kind of elite names that Mark's name's in there. That's what drives him. That's a really good thing. Like, he wants to be great. So he puts an awful lot of time into all the other things that go into his nutrition. Just like Gary Roberts does and Blake Wheeler does, they cover all their bases to get better. Blake kind of approaches the game in more of a grit way, and then Mark is watching the game. So he's trying to learn the game. Where can I position myself better on the ice? Where can I maximize this play? How many good plays, like positive result plays, can I make in a game? And he watches his video like that. So it's a different kind of a player, but I would agree with you. What I think in the perfect world is this is why these two guys are so good together, why I've always been reluctant to break them up. I had to with Brian Little's injury. But why they're so good together is they're both going in the same to the same goal from opposite viewpoints. So Blake is kind of this came in as a hands guy and he's trying to add some grit. Mark's come in as kind of an overall skilled guy. And for me, when you take a look at the best hockey that Mark's Scheifele's best hockey was played in two places. One is right now in this season when he went back with with Blake Wheeler and in the Nashville series in a couple of years ago where he set an NHL record for road goals in a series because he started to play like Blake. And then Blake has the hands to play like Mark, and that's why they're a wonderful pair.
Rounding out the first line here, Kyle Connor, he's got three goals, 3 years with 30 or more goals. Do you consider him underrated? And could you see him scoring 50 goals sooner than later?
Yeah, I consider him underrated now that he's got a long-term deal. You know, like, guys asked me questions about him last year, and I thought, yeah, he's all right. He's just okay. Bad attitude. Shows up for late work. No, so here's a little story about leadership, too. So Kyle comes in, and it's exactly what I was listening to what you guys were saying before I came on. It's exactly what Brian was talking about, soft skill. And now there's layers to it. Almost every highly skilled guy that comes out of amateur plays a soft game because they haven't had to, right? They haven't had to get on the puck. They haven't had to win battles. And then we get a whole bunch of guys that either learn how to do it as a soft skilled kind of player or don't. This guy learned how to do it. So the leadership part of that is Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele say, hey, we want to play with that kid. Right after, so I had sent him down, was kind of hard on him, wanted him to play a grittier game. Then these two guys recognize the skill level of this kid and say, hey, we want to play with that guy. And then it's always that osmosis, right? So now Kyle, I don't consider him a soft skill guy at all anymore because he gets on the puck. He'll hang on to the offensive zone. He's really, really improved his puck play in our end, the half wall play, which is an area that we've had to get much better at. So those are the areas that you see a slider built guy struggle with. He's starting to excel at it now. And now we've got a line that you're thinking, you know, I mean, I get breaking it up because it balances things out in your line, but each one of them complements each other so darn well that Kyle he's absolutely underrated. I expect that he will score 50 goals in the league, and he will be on the ice at the end of the game. So there's the mark of a great player. Whether you're up a goal or down a goal, that guy's on the ice at the end of the game.
You know, Paul, and we're with Paul Maurice, head coach of the Winnipeg Jets on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Paul, I'm curious about something you told me years ago when you were with Toronto, and I'm curious if you still every now and then get the same feeling. I remember I asked you, what was your welcome to the NHL moment as a coach? That moment where you realize, wow, this isn't, you know, we're not in Kansas anymore. And you said it was when you were with Hartford, it was one of your first practices. You blew the whistle and Sammy Kapanen took off like he was fired out of a cannon and you hadn't seen or experienced anything like that before. That was the, wow, this happens in the NHL kind of moment. Do you still get moments like that? I mean, you're 1,600 games behind the bench deep. Do you still have those same or similar Sammy Kapanen moments?
Yeah, all the time. And it almost always happens in practice. So, you know, that little, I guess we all had it, that little idea in the back of your head, you know, if I hadn't gotten injured or if I had a better coach, you know, I was right there. And then you get out on the ice and Blake Wheeler will turn a corner on a neutral zone regroup drill. And I've learned kind of over 20 years where to stand on the ice so you don't get wiped out. But he turns the corner and takes a wide route and will go by you so fast that you go, oh, my God. Like a man can move that fast on skates. You realize how good these guys are. Small things. At the All-Star game last year, and I mean, Patrick Kane's in the Central Division, so we see him, you know, five times a year. And he's an amazing player. But then when you get out and you just watch his hands. So as a coach, you're always watching other things. You just watch one player. His hands are way off the charts. I mean, I've had great players with great hands, but Patrick Kane's hands and what he does with his wrists and how he does that with the puck, that is just like a symphony, right? So I still do. I don't know that I'm any different than I was when I was, you know, like 12 years old as a kid, right? I'd go to the Sioux Greyhound games and Craig Hartsburg was playing and Wayne Gretzky was there and Paul Gauffey played there. There's still a little fan in me, a little in awe of what these guys are able to do. And when you get down on the ice and practice with them sometimes, and you know, Patty and Laine will heat one up without a goalie in the net, and you're thinking, oof, like, that shot would kill me if it hit me. Like, it is so awesome to see the elite at that level, and I've never lost that.
That's awesome. Berkey, you have another one for Paul?
Yeah, talk about your goaltender. This guy, what planet is this guy really from?
Yeah.
You know what? We're still learning that. But here's, you know, that we would all agree the goalies are a little bit different. But the best ones, and I haven't had a lot of guys that you would consider elite, but the closest thing, and I'm going to fire this name out, and just before I go, I want to qualify what I'm saying. I am one of the biggest Tom Barrasso fans and supporters in the world. He's brilliant. He's a friend. I think he was a fantastic competitor. So there's a little Connor Hellebuck in there, in that he firmly believes that he can be one of the greatest goaltenders of all time, and he's not coming off that belief. So that's the driver for him. And if he goes into a game, and he's had a bunch this year where we win 3-2, that he's made three or four fantastic saves. Like, he's banging on the coach's door to get Wade Flaherty to get his computer out because he's pretty sure he should have stopped those two. And he's driven like that. But what he doesn't do is he doesn't walk around on his off days spitting nails. So it's a real kind of unusual. Usually those wired guys, those intense guys, they never come off that level. He does. So on his off day, he's a little bit more relaxed. He's fun to talk about. He likes to talk about fishing. But when he gets out in practice or he gets into a game, he expects that he should be the best goalie in the world. And that's an unusual combination in terms of personality. It's also why we think we got a guy here that can be good for a very, very long time. Because, he comes in, he wants to play every single game. He never, ever talks about getting tired because I think he recovers really well on his off days.
Has he always been like that, Paul? Or did he have to learn to, you know what, if it's a bad game or a bad couple of periods, you need to park it? Has he always been able to just shake it off in rear view, or is that something that's had to develop?
Yeah, I would say develop is the right word, not necessarily change. I don't think it's a change in his personality, but when you go back to his first foot. So we had this situation. We had Andre Pavlik come to training camp, but we were kind of all agreed, or at least I had in my mind, that we had passed on Andre. It was time for him to go. We had Mike Hutchinson and we had Connor Hellebuck, and it's kind of like two of these three guys. But in my mind, it was clear that Connor was the most, I'm going to say the most talented, but Andre Pavlik is a very gifted man. But certainly Connor had the best combination of kind of being driven and a talented guy that we were going with him. But, you know, he got pulled, I think, seven times that year, right? And I always pulled him at the number five when he, regardless of how it was going, if he'd given up five. I think after one of them, I think it was the Ranger game here in Winnipeg, we lose 5-2. I pulled him midway through the second. But Connor comes out and says, hey, if I play like that, we're going to win the Stanley Cup and I'm going to win the Vezina. And that's kind of what started this whole, hey, Connor might be reading the game a little different than everybody else idea. But he's developed it. I thought he carried... He carried the losses and the struggles our franchise had 4 years ago appropriately, but he didn't rebound nearly as well. That's something he learned from taking it on the chin a few times, that if you're going to be a number one guy, and I give Wade Flaherty an awful lot of credit for this, monitoring these guys daily, but shaping them, trying to help them shape their minds. If you're going to be a number one guy, you got to have a real short-term memory.
You know, for the longest time with the Winnipeg Jets, and the goaltending sorted itself out. We just talked about Connor Hellebuck, and your point is well made. And anyone that's watched this guy plays knows exactly what you're talking about. For the longest time, we said about the Winnipeg Jets is this team is really good. They need a save and they need discipline. The goaltending, as I mentioned, sorted itself out. Hellebuck's been fantastic. And you did something that I thought was really unique. You brought referees to training camp. Take us behind the thinking behind that move, Paul.
The communication between players. So I'll just tell you about my experience, right? You always think that your team's getting ripped off. Every coach does. But sure. I got to the Winnipeg and couldn't believe it. Like I'm standing behind bench going, this team, and they're yelling at the referees all the time. So I come out of, you know, what's my history? I've got Ron Francis as a captain for a long time, and then I've got Matt Sundin, two guys that could handle referees and that earned the respect. Here, I got 10 guys hanging over the bench screaming at the referees. So there's a relationship problem that had been kind of here for a long time. We were a high penalty team, but we also had we had that kind of team, which I wasn't trying to take away from our team. You got Bufflin in your lineup. We had Chris Thorburn, Anthony Peluso, you know, Evander Kane. We had a tough team, and that's an edge, right? You don't want to play a game that's not to your strengths. But I did feel that we were not not so much it wasn't fair. It was just consistently we were going to the box on penalties that I would watch other teams get away with, whether they were playing against us or not, just from watching games. So what you know, the thing that, the rule in the coach's office is you're not allowed to complain. We use a different words, but you're not allowed to complain about something that you're not actively trying to fix. So you can kill a player in, in the coach's room. You can just eviscerate him, but only if you're trying to help him. So the same, we kind of applied that rule one night after refereeing toward the end of the year. We'd complained and complained and complained. So what are we doing to make it better? We got to get our players to understand two things. One, that these guys are men, right? That they're flying commercial. They do 82 games. They don't want to hear some kid that makes way more money than they're ever going to make whine about a call. And the second thing, and maybe more importantly, let's find out what these guys are seeing. What are they looking for that we're not recognizing? Because we were taking, for a big, tough team, we were taking way too many holding penalties, hooking penalties. Like it wasn't roughing penalties or cross-checking or boarding or little heavy penalties. It was the light, chintzy stuff. So we were on everybody's radar because we take a lot of penalties. So all I wanted to do is bring a guy in, and Paul Dvorsky is like the perfect guy to come in because he talks to players and he had a career of talking to players. So he came in and said, this is what I look for when I'm on the ice. These are the tells. These are the red flags. Our guys asked a bunch of questions. I brought him out on the ice. We ran kind of 5-on-5 D-zone coverage, which is where we were taking all our penalties. And he didn't blow the whistle. He just grabbed guys when they come out. So 10 guys would switch in, 10 guys would switch out, and he grabbed one and said, I don't know if I'd have called you on that, but now I'd be looking for you. So it really helped two things. It helped humanize the referees, that these guys are people. So, you know, we all yell at referees, but it can't be nonstop. And the other thing is give us an idea of what you do for a living. How do you do your job? Maybe that would help us understand what goes on the ice. And I think it did help. But, man, our team's kind of completely changed. So for a long time now, we've been sitting in the top 10 for fewest penalties.
No surprise you're one of the elite coaches in the NHL.
My team's,
that is a great story.
Paul, my team's never in that group.
No, but you get it. Like, similar to that, when I first got my first 2 years in Winnipeg, we would have had a team a lot like some of the teams that you had, Brian, and certainly the hockey that you came through. There's a percentage of calls that go against you on reputation, not on fact. And I think, like, you think about the teams in Anaheim, you could weather that, right? Like, your penalty killing was so good there. You were a dominant, powerful team there. You could kind of, it was some capital you were willing to spend based on the other benefits that teams wouldn't come at you quite the same way. The game changed then, and then we were losing that battle.
That's a great story, and those are great points. Paul, we cherish all the time we have with you. Thanks so much for stopping by today. Really quickly, what are you doing with the little downturn and time off now?
All the things that you never get to do, and part of it is kind of planning for what if we get a 10-day training camp here in a month, or, you know, yep, with all the other options that could happen here, just so that we're ready as coaches, that if they say, hey, we're going in 5 days, say, no problem, we got the video, we got everything done, we're ready to go.